This week's This Life with Dr. Bob Forrest is courtesy of Bergamot Sport, an all-natural athletic performance-enhancing and muscle recovery supplement with the usual multiple cardiovascular benefits associated with the polyphenols in the Bergamot products. Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
All right, welcome, Bob. You want to talk us in?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around the iPhone 7S. That's the one that just came out.
I suppose. There's an X coming out or something, an iPhone X.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Me neither.
I get them all. But anyways, it's time for This Life with Bob Forrest and Dr. Drew, or Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest.
And we have many special guests today.
And I'm looking at the book because I was around for some of these events.
So hold on.
I want to know the
Hold on.
What's the name of the book?
Hold on. Before I introduce the guests, I want to remind everyone that this episode of This Life is courtesy of Bergamot.com, BergamotNA.com, and the National Assessment Foundation, Bob.
888-494-9186. If you got trouble with drugs and alcohol, call.
And as we've been saying, that one of the reasons we love this organization is A, well-trained professionals on the phone who can help you. B, they will help everybody. And they do this unbelievable work where they will call you back until they find you a place to go have treatment, whether you have resources or not. And that is exceptional. Nobody else does that. That's the National Assessment Foundation. But Bob, as you pointed out on one of our other shows, that you have to be ready for treatment.
Yeah, because I told this story about dealing with this guy for 3 days. You know, because you've dealt with...
I
can't say who's on the show.
So go ahead.
Anyways, I'm dealing with an addict for 3 days. He has shitty insurance, can't find a place out of state. He goes, I don't want to go to Michigan.
All right, so that's Dr. Bruce Heischober. That's my partner.
Bruce has been dealing with that forever.
This Life. He's an emergency room doctor, addiction medicine specialist like myself. He is also Dr. Spaz from the Corolla Network. And our very special guest today, we have Stephen Adler and his mom, Deanna Adler. Yeah. And right now, we're just going to talk behind Stephen's back for a minute with Deanna. Her new book is called Sweet Child of Mine.
I have it in my hands.
It is an extraordinary... I had Deanna on my KBC program about a week ago. And was frankly deeply moved talking to you. I was.
Oh, thank you.
Do you know why?
No, I don't know why.
Well,
I know that Stephen is a success story for you,
which is helpful, which makes me feel good. But you're a success story, not because of me. Yeah. You did a lot of work. I could tell.
I know that. I don't know.
Deanna, has had to deal with Stephen forever and the distortions and it's hard, it's painful to have a child with addiction.
Oh,
it's scary.
Al-Anon, Nor-Anon.
Yeah. Al-Anon. You want to hear something funny? My daughter-in-law, Carolina, she kept saying to me, go to Al-Anon, go to Al-Anon.
By the way, I had to practically take her by the hair to Al-Anon, Carolina. So to her saying that is... deeply moving to me, too. So go ahead.
So she said, go to Al-Anon. And I said, no, I don't want to go to Al-Anon. The reason I didn't want to go to Al-Anon was because I didn't want to hear anybody else's problems.
Right.
I had enough of my own. So I don't want to hear anybody else's.
Can you believe Carolina was telling her to go to Al-Anon?
I know.
That's just phenomenal. But go ahead. So you went.
So finally, I went to a meeting. She took me to a meeting. And so I walked out of there. And it made me feel so much better because in reality, I don't have it so bad.
You can be really bad.
Yeah.
Your kid's alive for one thing.
You could be married to him.
That's right. That's exactly right. But not just that. But I just listened to these mothers talking. And I said, oh, my God. And I started going to Al-Anon meetings. And sometimes Stephen makes me go to AA meetings so I could understand. Because I don't have an addictive personality. So I don't understand. Why do you take something that's bad for you? Mm. I mean, I would never take anything that's bad for me.
Explain, Bob.
Well, it just seems like it's a good idea at the time.
it's a brain thing. It's a distortion, right?
Yeah.
It's going to solve problems, but it creates problems. And
right.
In the moment, you don't see the create problems part. You're only concerned with solving problems.
Right.
And even when you know it's not going to solve a problem, there's your part of your brain saying, do that no matter what. Just do
that. And then even when you know it's causing most of your problems, you'll say, yeah, but it's also the thing preventing me from feeling the problems that it's causing. It's just crazy. It's craziness.
Yeah.
On the way over here, I'm with my son Jamie and my son Stephen. And they were talking. And Jamie was saying how he has a friend that does the craziest thing, that he, like, he doesn't grow up because he takes drugs. Right. So Stephen started explaining to Jamie how when you first start taking drugs, say it'd be 11 or 12 years
that's
old.
That's where you stop.
And Stephen is telling Jamie this.
This is blowing my mind.
Me too, right? Now you know why I was so moved.
You're not going to believe it when you see Stephen, how he is. I stay at his house. You think for 1 minute that if anything bad was going on in his house, I would stay there? Forget it. I stay there for months at a time. I do, because he's such a nice guy, and he's so kind, he's and so generous, sweet. And so sweet. And he really is.
He always has been.
Yeah.
And so you were, but some of the stuff that she talks about in this book, now first of all, people, I think, remember on Celebrity Rehab when Deanna came in and visited Stephen, and he threw the chair and talked about distortions, right. About you. He had all these memories of you throwing him out on the street and stuff. There were distortions. Does he still cop to that, or does he still adhere to that?
I'll tell you a little story.
Her story was, how can I throw you out at 11? What about your bar mitzvah 2 years later? How did we give you a bar mitzvah?
I don't understand what he's talking about.
I wish I'd known that then.
Oh, yeah, because you believe what he tells you.
I don't know what to believe. When people are in their disease, I don't know what to believe.
Yeah, right. you can't believe
but
what
I know,
he says.
I know not to say no to somebody because I need to engage them. You know what I mean?
Right.
But go ahead.
Well, I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, I'm sorry. The bar mitzvah story.
Throwing
him out.
No. Wait a minute. Wait. Give me a second.
How sweet he is, and that you wouldn't stay at his house if he wasn't on the right path.
I want to tell you a story.
Mm-hmm.
But now I forgot what the story. See,
it'll come. I know how that is.
I'm just a little nervous today.
Don't be nervous.
This is something new for me. You know, I'm just starting to do this.
Talk about some of the stories you were mentioning.
Stephen this whole time, probably since '83 or something. Just the sweetest guy, and sweet and naive, kind of, right? That's how I would say he was at 20, right?
What I wanted to say was the story. This is a different story about being on Celebrity Rehab. Mm. About 6 months later, after me, I must have been on the show for maybe 20 seconds on the screen. And I'm standing in Las Vegas, and I'm at a buffet. A man and a woman and a little old lady in a wheelchair. Did I tell you this story?
No.
A little old lady in a wheelchair with white hair. She must have been 80 years old. And this couple about in their 40s. So they're staring at me. I'm with some friends. And I said to my friends, what are they looking at me for? I don't know who these people are. Well, eventually they walked over to me and they said, Mrs. Adler? I says, yes. And they said to me, they saw me on Celebrity Rehab. I says, how can you recognize me after 6 months? I was on screen for 20 seconds, and you know who I am? And they said, oh, we'll never forget that. We'll never forget you.
Oh, my goodness.
And then they start telling me how much they love Stephen and how wonderful he is and how he's the reason that I started playing the drums. And,
oh, wow.
You know, blah, blah, blah. You know, the same stories, you know. And I said, thank you so very much. I says, when I call Stephen tonight, I will tell him that I met you. Then he gives me his card. And he was either an electrician or a plumber. I don't remember. He says, Mrs. Adler, whenever you need some help, just call me. No charge. I says, wow. I says, thank you very much. And then he walks away. And he comes, a few minutes later, he comes back. And he says, Mrs. Adler, you're not the meanest mother in the world. She is. The little old lady in the wheelchair with the white hair. And I said, thank you so much for sharing that with me. And that's a true story.
Yeah,
she's, you're not the meanest mother in the world. She is.
These labels that get thrown around are just defense mechanisms, because the addict themselves, like what you witnessed Stephen going through for decades, is battling with themselves, and they're trying to find somebody to blame for it. Right?
Of course.
And you got a double barrel blame, and it was undeserved, and it's ridiculous.
I always try to, let's put it this way. I was so messed up mentally from having a son like that. And I think I told you this before, or I told some disc jockey. I don't know. I've done it so many times in the last few weeks. I don't know what I said. But if somebody has a child or a relative that's on drugs, maybe 10, maybe 15 people know about it. But with me, 30 million people know about it. It's a big thing, you know. I don't tell anybody who I was. I was so ashamed. I was in denial. Well, it's true.
Never thought of that.
Yeah, but now you're an inspiration. You understand that.
But you want to hear something? When I was writing this book, when I finished writing the book, it was so cathartic for me. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. And when I finished writing it and I gave it to the publishers, I wasn't ashamed anymore.
Mm. Wow.
My son has a disease, just like if you have asthma.
Yeah.
Or if you take insulin or something, he has a disease.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I wasn't ashamed anymore. And I was happy that I wrote a book. I was even happier that it was going to be published.
Awesome.
Ah, I couldn't believe it. I waited 10 years to have this book published. 10 years. And it's over. It's done with. You know who I am. I'm Deanna Adler. I'm the mother of Stephen Adler. I'm not the meanest mother in the world. I have three sons. I love them all.
Mm-hmm.
They're all good to me. I do anything in the world for them. And that's it.
Let me ask you something. In my experience, I'm codependent. And the addicts, alcoholics in my life, what worked for me was the 12 steps and what I share with my patients.
Right.
And the families are usually, they just don't want to go to Al-Anon, don't want to go to Narnon. But the powerlessness, it's like, well, why do I have to work the 12 steps? But for me, it's something that works for more than just drugs and alcohol. And when you're in a relationship with an addict alcoholic, you don't realize how you feed into that and how you can help break the cycle and do what you need for yourself.
I'll tell you something. One day I saw Stephen walking down the street. He lived right down the street from me in Las Vegas at this time. He was walking down the street, and I knew he was going to a drug dealer. But I was so ashamed. Somebody's going to see him. The neighbor's going to see him. My friends are going to see him.
You drove him.
I drove him. That's right. I picked him up. I says, where are you going? He says, I'm just going to go visit a friend, Mom. And I says, all right, listen, let me take you over there. So, of course, we go to the seediest area.
North Vegas?
Well, no, it wasn't North Vegas, but it was close to where we lived. It was close to where
we lived. He didn't have to go to North Vegas.
Yeah.
He knew where to go.
I didn't have to go. It was just down the street. And so I said, okay, I'll see you later. He says, Ma, wait for me.
Oh, boy.
I said, okay. So I'm sitting in the car. I know where he's at. I'm not a dummy.
Yeah.
I know what he's doing. And I'm sitting in the car, and I'm getting paranoid. The police are looking at me. You know, they have cameras all around. The police are looking at me. This is a drug.
You're an accomplice.
Yeah. The drug dealers.
You're the driver.
I'm the driver.
Getaway car. Yeah. You're imagining your mugshot.
Yeah. I'm saying, oh, my God, I'm sitting here. And I'm sitting like a bump.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to move because I don't want to leave him there because, I'm ashamed for him to walk home. You know, I don't want anybody to see him. So I wait about 10, 15 minutes. He finally comes out. He says, thanks, Ma. And I drive him home, and I let him out, you know, and that was the end of it. I did that maybe three or four times.
Mm.
One time it was raining so hard, and here I'm going to the grocery store, and he's walking to the dealer's house.
Mm.
And not only that, you know, I lived in a nice area in Vegas. It was called the Las Vegas Country Club Estates.
Mm-hmm.
It's very nice. It's all enclosed. You wouldn't believe how many drug dealers are in there. That are living there, right down the street.
Well, they knew Stephen was there, so they knew that. They knew they could make a living.
I'm telling you, because
incredible.
Sometimes
in a gated community,
$1 million homes.
Welcome
beautiful
to America.
Homes. Yeah,
yes.
And
that's crazy. When was this?
Yeah. Well, it's in the book. I lost my home.
Mm.
This was about 9 years ago.
Mm.
Something like that.
Did he get arrested in that gated community too? Sitting in his car one time?
I don't remember that.
What are some of those stories, Bobby, you were looking at going, oh, well, I was there for that, and I was
there
for
this.
Well,
the thing, I'm sure you remember when he left the band, right? That week, I was around that week.
Yeah.
Because, as you know, a lot of the people were worried, you know, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Duff and Slash, most importantly. And so I was sober at the time, so I got nominated to try to just be with him and make sure he doesn't hurt himself or, you know. And I remember going over that old house in Studio City off Sunshine or whatever that he had.
Mm-hmm.
He was just sitting in a chair crying, watching Guns N' Roses videos.
Mm.
And I just, like, all my codependency and my, you know, it's just like, what do you do?
Wow.
You know, and that he survived that is amazing.
Well, now, when
it's
he
a
was-
testimony to how
resilient
drug addicts are.
Yeah.
When he was thrown out of the band, we didn't know about it. We didn't know what was going on because he wasn't in touch with us, you know, because he was ashamed. You know, we would see him occasionally, but we didn't know that he was getting thrown out of the band. And so we're sitting watching the MTV Awards show. And I'm sitting there with my husband and my youngest son, Jamie.
That's how you found out he was out of the band?
Well, because Axel says Steven Adler is not in the band anymore because he takes drugs.
Oh, my God.
So I said to myself, look who's calling the kettle black. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, really. And so I got up out of my chair. I'll never forget this. I got up out of my chair, walked out the door, walked around the block, and came back in the house. And I told my husband, I can't go to work tomorrow. He says, what are you talking about? You can't go to work. And I says, I can't go to work because everybody now knows that my son's not in the band and he's a drug addict because I always denied it. I was in denial.
Yeah.
So.
First time a rock and roller's ever been a drug addict.
Yeah.
That's what shocked everybody.
Because we were so naive and we didn't know anything. We really didn't know anything. And in reality, we don't want to know anything.
Of course.
You know?
Of course.
And so my husband says, you're going to go to work tomorrow and I promise you, nobody's going to say one bad word to you.
Yeah, he's right.
And he was right. Mm-hmm. Not one person. I worked as a waitress at this deli. And not one person said one wrong word to me. From that day forward, they never asked about Stephen again.
I'm sure they felt bad for you, if anything.
I was so hurt
for you.
Because like I said before, if you have a son that's a drug addict, maybe 10 people know. But 30 million plus know that my son's a drug addict. So the whole
and
world
what is
knows.
That, what does that represent? And we talked about this on several podcasts, that I believe parents are getting too much blame
Hold on. That's what I'm going to get into with Steve.
It's poorly run treatment centers that are proselytizing that.
Hold on a second. We have limited mics, so I've got to replace Bruce with the great Stephen Adler.
Great to be here.
Do you have any last questions, Bruce? But
thank you for sharing your experience.
It's my pleasure.
Fantastic. It's really
I got lots of other stories. I want you to read the book.
It's
on Amazon.
It'll be on our website, drdr.com.
I thank you for
that. You know, I filled in on Loveline for you, and Stephen was there. It's about 15 years ago.
So both Drew and Stephen?
Both Andy and Stephen?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was trying to ditch it.
Yeah, maybe I didn't. Who knows?
No.
Also, the Bergamot guys, you can order today and get 10% off at drdr.com. Type in the code DRDREW. We do appreciate everyone's support. Please, we hope to hear from you in the comments on iTunes. Also, those 5-star ratings are great. Please subscribe there today. And check out the other family of podcasts that we have.
We're going to take a break.
Bruce
come
is
back
from This Life.
Steven?
Excuse me. Bruce is from Weekly Infusion. You can check that out. We're going to come back after a little break. We're going to have Deanna and Steven right after this. You know, I'm always happy to talk to you about our friends at Bergamot. They're the makers of a variety of supplements that use the extract from the bergamot citrus fruit, those polyphenols. That fruit is in Italy. These supplements act as a natural statin that may improve a number of cardiovascular conditions, as well as symptoms of the metabolic syndrome, which includes high blood pressure, high cholesterol, high blood sugar. As you know, I've been excited about the natural treatment since I first heard about it. I'm getting behind it. Science behind it is sound, and physicians throughout the world and cardiologists are actually using it. Now, the makers that brought to you the formulation Bergamot NA, Bergamot Pro Plus, now bringing you Bergamot Sport. It provides all the same cardiovascular benefits, but has additional additives designed to aid athletes and those with a very, very active lifestyle. Bergamot Sport may help improve stamina and reduce recovery time and reduce muscle inflammation. Now, I've been taking Bergamot myself, and I suggest you talk to your physician to see if Bergamot Sport is right for you. And for a limited time, our listeners can save 10% on their order by entering the code Dr. Drew, DRDREW, at checkout. Again, that is DRDREW, all one word, at checkout, and you save 10% on your order of Bergamot. To order the Bergamot Sport for yourself, visit bergamot.com, Bergamot N-A, Bergamot, BERGAMET.com, or click on the Bergamot banner on drdrew.com. So we are back. A reminder, to support the people who support our podcast of Bergamot and the National Assessment Foundation. What's the website again?
It's nationalassessmentfoundation.org or .com, I imagine. But the phone number is 888-494-9646. 9186. If you got a problem with addiction, call them.
And I stand behind the Mega and the Pro Plus for treating metabolic syndrome, lowering cholesterol, and weekly infusion. We have an interview with me and Dr. Ehrlich coming up and with Bruce, so give him a chance to poke at him with his products.
Free samples?
I will ask Ehrlich. We're anxiously awaiting Stephen Adler. He's going to come in here and join Deanna Adler. The book
is like a rock star.
The book is Sweet Child
He's
of Mine.
Like a rock star.
The book is Wait Sweet Child of Mine. He's coming in, yeah.
He's very handsome, my son.
I know.
As you well know.
Look at this.
Look at this.
Oh, hey, buddy. How are you, man? Good to see you, buddy. Oh, my goodness. He's the best hugger. I can't breathe.
Hey, man.
Steven, you look great, man. You only look good. Jamie? How are you, man? Good to see you. Hey, man, look at this guy. Can you believe it? I told you he'd be huggy when he came in. We can't get a headset on him. What's he showing you, Bob? Bob, put your headset on. I can't hear you. Fantastic.
Holy moly. Stephen Adler bearing gifts.
There you are. It's on now.
Four agreements.
Now you can.
This is Tom Brady's favorite book.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
All right.
There you are.
God, I hate the sound of my voice.
Why?
So I was at the bar the other day, yes. And this hooker comes up to me. And she says, I'll do anything you want for $300 if you could tell me in three words. So I think about it. And I pull out my money. I go, paint my house. So I got this hooker painting my house. She's doing a great job if you guys are interested.
Steven, it's a perfect.
Oh, hi, guys. I didn't even see you.
Did you say hi to Andy?
How are you?
Did you say Andy?
Of course. I love him. He looks great.
Did you see Dr. Bruce?
Dr. Bruce.
I did love why I filled in for him.
Oh, yeah.
So, Stephen.
I can't hear you.
How about
the transformation of Stephen Adler?
How about your mom?
She's wonderful.
Oh, my God.
We both have grown so much.
I talked to you on the phone the other day, and I was moved by her. And the more I talked to her, the better it gets. There's no holes in the story.
Every day life gets better. That's the whole objective, is to have a better day than yesterday.
So no, awesome. I wish people could see your mom. Mom's like showing, like, yeah, everybody, Stephen Adler, buddy.
I can't tell you how
20
happy
years
I am.
In the making.
Yeah, you know what?
25 years in the making.
Who gives a shit? It takes what it takes.
The only thing that matters.
But I want parents to not get discouraged. Idea that you go somewhere for 30 days and it's all going to get fixed.
No, please.
No, it doesn't work that way. In fact, rehabs, I think, are a waste of money and a waste of time. Unless you own that rehab, then it's good.
Well, they
I believe
how
in
many,
detoxing.
How many rehabs have you been in?
22, 23.
22,
Bob went to 24 or something.
24.
Right?
Yeah. We're almost pushing 50.
Yeah.
And 52, with Martine went 52. To 36. Between he and me and Martine from Porno for Pyros, almost 100 treatments.
Isn't that Christina?
Yeah.
Her Applegate's husband? Yeah. I see him at Crossroads sometimes. Yeah. Speaking of
did
Crossroads.
Did he have a cancer or something?
No.
One of those pirate guys did, I think.
Yeah, no. Peter
did.
Yeah.
They had a kid. Yeah. They had a little princess. 36,
22, that's 58. Do the math, Drew. 68, 78.
No, I'm not doing all
82
math.
Treatments between three
job.
People.
They throw, wow, throw, yeah. Throw
and look at us, we're awesome. Throw,
yeah, now after how many hundreds of thousands of wasted dollars.
Listen, if you throw Sizemore and Andy in there, it's like. It's like okay, wait. Our producer is yelling at me. What's that, Susan?
One at a time.
Don't speak one at a time. We're too excited here.
Well, Stephen, you talk.
Well, I'm so proud of my mother.
The book is great.
And I'm so thankful that she's a part of my life and that I'm being able to be a part of her life. And we're going to enjoy life together.
Tell us about this book you handed us.
All right, the book I got you guys is, I fully support AA, and that is definitely a way to get started. But I've been practicing this book called The Four Agreements by Juan Miguel Ruiz. Mm-hmm. And it AA gives you a start. This book has helped me become the person I used to be. Before I had an abusive relationship with life that I was kicking my ass.
I actually don't disagree with Stephen. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't need to be on drugs either.
Well, no, we always call it, what Bob and I always sort of call it, like full recovery. You know, AA gets you into recovery, but full recovery is up to you.
Making an effort.
Well, it sometimes means different kinds of therapies. It sometimes means some spiritual something. It sometimes means a career something.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah, it's what interests us in treating addicts is return. Well, become more than you knew you could be. You flourish in a way you didn't expect, right?
I never thought I'd be this happy. My life has done a complete 180.
And
all right, 179, because I do. I still enjoy smoking a little pot. Last time I said that on your show, my wife Carolina said that the internet people are saying all this. Hey, I used to drink rubbing alcohol with Gatorade, mixed with Gatorade. Okay. I smoke a little weed. Who cares?
Not only that, but your mom told me a story that made my head spin, too. She goes, well, my daughter-in-law, Carolina, took me to an Al-Anon meeting. I'm like, what?
Yes.
What?
Yeah, she goes to NAA meetings.
I heard the whole story. But the fact that Carolina is the one now bringing other people into 12
Yeah, minutes, vegan. She's 100%
she here?
Vegan. No, no.
Please say hi for us.
Of course. Hi, hello, mama.
She suffered much like your mom with your illness.
She suffered terribly.
Yeah, your illness.
I mean, she was right there. Yeah, a lot of pain.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't mean to.
Your illness. I didn't say you.
Yeah, yeah, no,
your
no.
Illness,
I didn't mean to, but I was sick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same sickness as if I had asthma or diabetes, but people don't think of it that way. I mean,
I go home now. I gotta let Stephen talk. I'm done. My work here is done.
When you drink and do and take drugs and do whatever, you're not a rational person.
Your mom was saying she couldn't understand why people would do a drug when you know it's bad for you, when you know it's going to harm you.
Because I have a disease.
And I was trying to get I tried to get Bob to explain it.
Seems like a good idea.
Yeah. It did at the time, didn't it? Felt great hanging out with that rock band in the garage and stoned, doing beer bongs of Old English 800. Hell yeah. Throwing up in front of her friends at the Tupperware party. That was great. And that ruled.
What happened to the Tupperware party? Is that in the book?
Yeah, it's in the book.
What happened?
Well,
I want her to tell it.
Right.
Go ahead.
Did he rehearse in your garage when they were kids?
No, they didn't have a garage.
No.
They had a U-shaped garage.
I want to hear about the Tupperware party.
How old were you, 12?
11, 12
years old. And I'm having a Tupperware party. And he comes into the house, and he walks in the house, and he vomits right in front of everybody.
And then walk away into my bedroom.
Yeah, and so I said to my friends, I says, oh, my God, he must have the flu. Denial again. Denial again.
I threw up 6 Old English 800s. Okay.
Smelled like beer. Smelled like malt
liquor.
That's
not a flu. Okay?
And so I said,
that's a severe sickness. Okay?
He must have the flu, I told my friends.
Yeah, denial.
Could you smell the malt liquor?
You want to know something? It was so many years ago, I don't remember.
Yeah. My dad used to smoke cigarettes. I don't even remember smelling anything.
Yeah,
it was that long ago. But I know I used to say, "Please don't do it," and then now I do. But
we got to get that next.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Do the gum or something. Get
trying. I got the gum. Yeah, give me a piece of gum before I go crazy.
yeah, it's good. I'd rather you do that.
What is that?
Yeah, even if it's some of the time.
The problem with this gum is you go through the withdrawal just trying to open it. Yeah.
We'll give you a little pair of scissors or something.
You gotta have your fingernail.
But Bob, you wanted to talk about parents and blaming parents, and you said we talked to Steve about that.
So I've always thought, you know, trauma goes on in childhood. So something happened in childhood, whether it's willful or neglect or just something traumatic happens in childhood, and that. The model of drug treatment in America was highly. It was highly focused on that. The Hazel, then Betty Ford, right?
On what?
Then
focus on what? I missed your
on
radio.
Trauma.
Yeah.
Right. Cool. Being a component of addiction.
Which it is.
But with the explosion of thousands of rehabs, which Stephen's been to, ones in New York and ones he ended up in Detroit, and you were over, you know,
and walking through the wheat field in Kansas.
God.
Getting off the airplane in New York, staying there for 2 weeks.
The quality of care went down, but the focus on trauma got misinterpreted through the last 15 years, I think, as blaming of parents. Well, it's my parents' fault. And it's not.
You know what it is? It's the resentment that you have towards your family, your friends.
But it's really somebody. Towards yourself.
Yeah, but it's all on me. It's all on each other. But it's like I had resentments towards my mother. I had resentments toward my band.
Yeah.
And resentment is like rocket fuel and a lighter. You light that lighter, it's going to be a mess, and it's just going to get ugly. That's what it is. Resentment is the worst thing.
How'd you let go of them?
I read this book, and I day after day, I just kept practicing it. you know, being, trying to be impeccable with my words, you know, not take things personal, don't make assumptions, and do my best, no more, no less.
When was there a moment that, because
I... simple.
No,
it's
I understand.
It's so hard to do.
Well, but is there a moment when you committed to that and was something going on in your life that helped open that up for you?
My wife gave me this book. And every morning, I would have my coffee.
But you were willing.
I made an effort.
But why? Why all of a sudden you're willing?
Well, for one, I got my head clear. Yeah. You know, I got put in a mental hospital in Kentucky. Holy shit. Kentucky. In the snow. I got out. I came home. This was January 2014. And I came home after like 33 days, and I went right to the liquor store. Next door, I went right to the liquor store the next day, and then the next day I was going to walk out the door, and I said, I can't do this anymore.
There you go.
I'm not going to do this. So I woke my wife up.
You can't explain it, Drew.
Yeah.
Nobody can explain it.
I woke my wife up, and I said, honey, can you take me to an AA meeting? And there was one on a Riverside, or no, Moore Park, a church on Moore Park. And I said, just take me there. And then I ran into my brother, who I didn't see for years. Was there, and then
just by chance?
Just by chance. It's God. Yeah. You know, you have to believe.
Well, many people will describe it as something stepping in. Did you feel like something stepped into you in that moment?
No, I stepped in.
You stepped
in. I started taking charge. I was going, I'm not going to let this alcohol and this addiction, you know, keep bringing me down. And I said, you have to make an effort. I had to make an effort
But you made lots of efforts. I've seen you make efforts.
Okay, so I was good for a little while.
Yeah.
You got to keep doing it every day. You have to re-up yourself.
Yeah.
And that's why, like I said, the simple book, The Four Agreements, I have my coffee.
We got to get this guy.
And I read, yes. Oh, yeah.
Simone's lurking in the background here. She signs off on him.
My Audible, it's an amazing book.
Not even for addicts, just for anybody. Tom Brady's talking about this book.
Really?
Yeah, his whole life, he says, is based around this book.
Jesus.
He just said it after the Super Bowl.
No shit.
I think it might be hard to get this writer for our podcast.
Wow. Juan, his bank account's going to go, right? Good for Juan. But it helps. Yeah. I mean, when you go into rehab.
They're impeccable, and it's weird. The same things that Tom Brady talked about, you just said, impeccable with your word. Yeah. That stood out to me when I heard that interview. Like, wow.
Well, because most people don't know what that even means.
I know what it means. It's really hard
to
do.
I know.
It's really hard.
It's very hard.
What does it mean to Stephen? What does it mean to you?
Impeccable means sin. And M means without. So impeccable without sin. So that's like you don't talk about other people. You don't look in the mirror and you say, oh, I'm ugly, I'm fat, I'm this and that. There's always going to be somebody uglier than you. Always going to be somebody better looking than you.
That's an aphorism right
there. You had an indiscretion today. You talked about your voice.
Oh, I hate my voice.
Yeah, well, that's not impeccable.
I should be a cartoon.
Stop it.
Which I would actually love.
It's not impeccable.
No, my voice is very recognizable.
There you go.
It is very recognizable.
What's wrong with that?
I was talking to one of our friend Ashes, our friends, Scott.
He's pointing at Jamie, his brother, who's here.
Yeah, Scott Storch. I was talking to his son on the phone, and the second I got on the phone, he said, dude, I'm Steven Adler. I don't like to say it. Was, hey, dude, how you doing? He's like, dude, I can't believe it's Steven Adler.
So
crap.
Your mom now has her book. Do we wear this? The four?
He gave me the book. He bought me the book, and I read it. I have it right next to my bed.
You're reading it?
And I read it.
Is it helping
every day. I read it every day.
Is it helping you?
Does it help me? It makes me feel better. Let's put it that way. I don't have any guilt about anything.
What would you say to moms that feel guilty?
Or shame. Well, shame is her thing.
Led to believe that they're responsible for their adult children having addiction.
Or they feel like somehow they are or should be responsible.
Because that's the thing that binds the illness.
Yeah.
You know, it keeps you sick.
Now that I know more and I see that my son, he's alive, he's good, he's well, it's not my fault what he did. And I know that. And it took me an awful long time to realize that it's not my fault.
Not.
I didn't teach him to drink. I didn't teach him to do drugs. I didn't teach him anything like that. And
nobody in my family drank or did drugs.
Everybody is responsible for themselves.
Yeah.
Drew, zero in on what I'm trying to describe, because I know you can put it in a way that's easily understandable.
No, I
people are getting blamed for other people's problems.
Well, because it's easy to blame somebody else for your problems. Misery loves company. Hell, it's not my fault. If people would be just more honest and open up more, it'd be so much easier.
I would argue, though, that you're all right. You're right. Everyone's correct. But what Bob's talking about is sort of a new phenomenon, and I would argue it is
dangerous, I think.
No, but it's also disrespectful and demeaning to the addict for a parent to have the grandiosity to assume that anything that's happening to their child is all about them.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
All those years that Stephen was on drugs, he used to curse at me. I mean, terrible, terrible words. But I was always there for him. I never stopped loving him because I knew that it wasn't Stephen that was doing that. It was the drugs that was doing that, not Stephen. Stephen Adler has to be the nicest person you ever want to meet.
I'm the coolest guy you ever want to meet.
But so when he's being mean to me and he's pushing me around and he's saying terrible things to me and he doesn't talk to me, you know, he stops talking for months and months and months. It's not him. It's not my son. It's the drugs.
Yeah.
And you have to realize that. And I finally realized that.
Well, I think that what...
But hang on, though. But you assumed the shame for his illness.
Oh, God, I was so ashamed. Yeah. In denial, ashamed.
But what do you say to parents that are sort of in that same mindset?
All right, stop it already.
That's what we say. Stop it. It's hard to get them to do
That's just part of the four agreements. Stop it already.
It's so easy to hear it. You read the book. It's like reading a Sesame Street book. It's so basic and so easy to understand, but it's so hard to do.
Have we, as humans, just gotten so far away from the basic stuff of living?
Of course. The gods are so pissed. The gods are pissed right now of what's going on.
Mm. And so it really is getting back to basics.
Yeah. Before I did drugs, I knew what, getting beat up in life was all about. Beating myself up.
Before you did drugs?
Before I was beating myself up, I was a happy-go-lucky guy. I enjoyed life. I looked forward to the next day. I couldn't wait to go outside. And then the drugs and alcohol. First, it's that 1AA thing I really like. That alcohol is cunning, powerful, and baffling.
Yeah.
Those two times in the last over three years, there was two separate occasions that I drank. I didn't even realize, one time I knew what I was doing. The first time, I didn't even know what I was doing. I was in a terrible place to do it. With so many people around, I didn't even realize I did it till I got on the airplane and I put my headphones on and I was all, holy shit, what did you do? What did you do? My wife walked away to go to the bathroom. The addict that's doing push-ups in the back of your head is waiting. Mm. It was so cunning. It said, okay, get something to drink. And it was so powerful. I went up to the bartender. I whispered in his ear. I said, give me two shots of Jaeger and put it in a Coke. With Coke in a big Coke glass, not a drink glass. And it was so powerful, I didn't even realize I did it until I even got on the plane.
Mm.
So it's step five in the four agreements. There's a fifth agreement, which is being aware of being aware.
Mm.
And it sounds simple, but the second time I drank, I went as most addicts are and most addicts will do, is I went in this bar with a rational mind. Sober, rational mind. And I said, I'm going to go in and I'm going to have two shots and that's it. And I'm going to walk out. So 12 shots later, I'm getting thrown out of my ass on the sidewalk. But the second I had that first drink, I stopped being a rational person.
Yeah.
So that was it. There's just no one.
Well, however you learned it, you've learned it, Mr.
I'm just thankful I survived. I love you. And I'm so thankful for both of you for giving me that opportunity. Because I got off the heroin and drugs.
I know.
It was just the alcohol that I had a little problem with after the show. But both of you were able to, the support and the opportunity. I did not appreciate you guys getting me arrested. That was so wrong. But it happened. It's over. No biggie. But you gave me an opportunity to change my life. And when you see yourself on on TV or on a screen, like even on your phone.
Yeah.
That's reality. You could see yourself lying.
Yeah.
Oh, you could see yourself in denial. You could see yourself full of shit. I mean, all of us that were on that show, when somebody was in denial or lying, they didn't think it. I didn't think it. But you could see it. And then you watch yourself, and you're like, holy shit, I'm so full of shit. This is ridiculous. So it's an eye-opener. It's an eye-opener. I recommend that to anybody in their families that are addicts.
Film them?
To film them.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't know how many times that I've come to, you know, the next day, and my wife or somebody was telling me, you did this and you did that. And I'm like, I didn't do any of those things. You're crazy. What are you talking about? Oh, really? As you showed me the phone. It's like, really? Here. And then it's like,
didn't David Hasselhoff's daughter do that or something?
Yeah, when he was drunk or eating a cheeseburger. Good for him. Good for
her. Felt bad for him at the time, but I guess he seems pretty good now.
Because you finally see yourself as you and how you're acting. You, as a person, don't see yourself like other people see you.
Yeah.
You know, you look
especially with the disease, doesn't want you.
Yeah, you're blind.
Yeah.
To the fog.
When he was on Celebrity... Not Celebrity Rehab. It was a Sober Living House. Sober House.
Somebody, that's when he got arrested.
Well, I didn't watch the show. Somebody told me that Steven's on Sober House.
Yeah.
I said, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it. So I never watched it. Denial again. Didn't want to know anything. So I never watched that show. After him being on Celebrity Rehab, I said, that's enough for me. You know, I didn't want to see anything anymore.
Yeah, so. You know, I know a lot of alcoholics in my life, including my dad and hundreds of alcoholics. And some alcoholics, when they get drunk, they say what they really believe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, what they really thinking.
Steven doesn't. Steven says stuff he doesn't believe, and he insults. It's almost as if this other person comes out of him to be mean and to stand up for himself. It's the opposite of who he is.
Isn't it interesting
to
how some,
me?
Yeah,
he wanted to beat me up.
It's the laws of rationality.
That's why it's easier for you to like go, I didn't do that, because you couldn't imagine you did that.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine
I still, to
me,
this day,
this person
still
here,
watch this. He'll still do it. You tried to push me in the pool and you wanted to punch me in the face and you were chasing me around. You're going to beat me up for no reason.
And it's the funniest thing. I couldn't kick anybody's ass. Okay? He could have easily pushed me in the pool. But I could see me doing that. Now I have a more clear head.
Because I've known him so long, Drew.
Let me guess. Steven's holding.
Hi, Lawrence. Larry's here.
Lawrence Spangliola.
All right, we're going to take a little break.
Take a little break.
Right back after this.
Wait, you got commercials?
National Assessment Foundation, it is the first not-for-profit concierge service developed for those suffering with drug and alcohol addiction. They provide you with professionals that you need. They have recovering people and well-trained people doing the assessments, and they refer to high-quality programs, and they follow up to make people sure they get into a program. And even those without coverage, without any resources, they will help them get treatment as well. And it is free of charge. They're a group of dedicated professionals whose goal is to help. They have a good knowledge base. They are connected to thousands of recovery specialists across the country. And most importantly, they are the one for you. The team is built of recovering addicts. As I said, they've been where you've been. They've been there and back many times. And they believe that your treatment should be as unique and as individualized as you. They custom build the plan and the referral. They believe that money should not stand in the way of quality treatment you deserve, and they will advocate on your behalf to ensure you get the best treatment available and be sure your disease doesn't prevent you from getting onto that treatment. And you should not worry about planning the treatment where you stay. You've got enough on your plate dealing with the disease of addiction. They will take care of everything. They will even help with travel arrangements on your behalf. That is the National Assessment Foundation at 888-494-9186. Again, 888-494-9186. All right, welcome back. We've played musical chairs once again. Of course, Steven Adler's with me. Steven.
I'm still here. Hello.
Deanna Adler has relinquished her mic. I'll tell you to whom in a second, but I want to remind people again, Sweet Child of Mine is the book. It was written with the help of Lawrence Spagnola, and so Larry is here with us. Larry, welcome to the program.
It's an honor to be here.
And Jamie is here as well, Steven's brother.
Hey, Doc.
And we brought Lawrence in for many reasons. He is not only the author of Deanna's book, but also...
Steven's book, which got the whole ball rolling, Appetite for Destruction, 9 years ago. We came out with that, and it was a bestseller, and we were very fortunate to reach a pretty wide audience. And it was because of that that I think it paved the way for Deanna to write an even broader treatment of what happened with the opiate addiction and her dealings, not just with Stephen, but with the entire band.
Did you know the magnitude of her recovery when you launched into this? Did you understand how much progress she had made, or did you learn that the course of it, or did it keep happening during the book writing?
It actually was, yeah, it was evolving.
Yeah,
I mean, we literally finished this book, Dr. Drew, and then within a six-month period, the Dr. Kornfeld incident came up, tying Prince in with Stephen, and then GNR reunited. So, okay. Like, it was like two things that we never thought were going to happen.
So, tell about the Dr. Kornfeld thing. That's you, Stephen.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Now, Dr. Kornfeld was a crazy person who...
Without resentment.
Without resentment.
With
peace
and love.
With peace and love, no resentment. I'll be impeccable with my word. I can't.
He mistreated you. He didn't treat you
well. He mistreated
me.
He mistreated everybody. He's taking advantage of people. And it's not just him. There's lots of doctors who do that. He happened to be one in the spotlight at that time.
Because of the Prince.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Anna Nicole Smith, her doctors. Nobody, each doctor didn't know that she was seeing three, four other doctors,
but
too.
But still, giving opiates to a healthy woman is insane.
No, it's insane.
It's insane.
It's insane.
And then sending your...
Money. Some doctors, this is all about money. I don't understand it, but...
Yeah.
I mean, money's important to a degree, but...
I want to believe that they think they're doing right. I want to believe it.
You know they're not doing right. Can I have a prescription?
Right.
I just got a prescription for, you know, like 90 painkillers.
But they,
no problem here.
But they were trained in a day when they were insisted. There were attorneys that were breathing down their neck, telling them pain is whatever the patient says it is, and we're going to put you in prison if you don't treat their pain properly. Literally, that.
Oh,
was
yeah,
going
yeah.
on.
Oh, it was a different story back then. Yeah. I used to ditch school every day in the '70s.
The '90s when it really took off.
Yeah, my friends' kids go to school. They got to be dropped off.
Yeah.
And they have to check in, and they have to be picked up. And if they don't show up, the school calls the parents. And
speaking
she
of
didn't
kids,
know I did school for 30 years.
I want to make. She just found out just now. In fact, I want to make sure you have a chance to. Speaking of kids, to mention your friend's program.
Oh yes, my friend Tommy Hollenstein. He's my sponsor, and he's a wonderful, wonderful person. He was in an accident, and he's been in a wheelchair for. Quite a number of years.
Paraplegic.
Yeah.
That's Jamie talking there.
Yeah, that's my brother.
Yeah.
And there, he's...
Don't worry, I'm going to get into you in a second.
He does more in one day, in one week, than I did in 5 years. I mean, he's in a wheelchair, but it doesn't stop him. Mm. I mean, he goes water skiing. This is the latest benefit. Let me read this to you. He sent this to me. I'm getting old. I need glasses. Okay. 16th Annual Gala, the original Old Havana, March 4th, 2014, at Straglin.
I'll read this right.
Yeah, you read it. I can't see. Mold, I can't see.
Straglin Company. Hollywood, it's... why do I know these names? Or Georgiana Dunkel-Kelman. She's an attorney I know who does a lot of work for kids. Dee Summers, Scott Silveri.
Where is it at?
Taglian Complex, March 4th. Oldness. It's we'll just look up probably what a night in Old Havana. That's Georgiana right there.
Okay, let me see. Hold on. He gave me. Okay, he said the event is for Shane's Inspiration. Here, you read that.
All right,
I can't see it.
Shane's Inspiration, building parks for disabled kids, takes place at the Taglin Complex, Taglan Complex in Hollywood, Saturday, March 4th, 6 p.m., emceed by Andy Garcia. Theme is Night in Old Havana. So I imagine we'll put something up on our website to try to support
it. That'll be great.
Now, in addition to these guys' books, Deanna's and Stephen's, you wrote Rodney King's book, too.
That was a... A wonderful opportunity to get to know somebody really well who he had patiently waited, Doctor, for every politician, every cop, everybody that was involved in that incident to put out their book and get on their talk show. And then he wanted the last shot. And so even though it took 20 years, I believe he does have the final word on it. And what he wanted people to know more than anything else was that he himself kind of rose above his body that night and saw himself getting beaten.
He thought he was going
to
die.
He had an OBE.
He told me he thought he was going to die.
And then he doesn't know how he got sucked back in, but that's what kept him going.
Jesus.
And that's when he had a pulse. But it's amazing how much abuse he took. And whenever we'd even just gather to have lunch, he continually would shift in his seat because he had just had so much trauma to his joints.
Steve got to know.
Well, I we were roommates.
Impeccable with your speed.
Oh, yeah, no. He told me many times, he said, I had every right to have my ass beat. He said he was on PCP, he was drinking and driving and on PCP. He says he would pull over, the cops would go behind him, he'd pull over and then they'd walk up to his car and he would take off and just, you know, speed off down the street, not even watching, you know, bumping other cars. He says he was wasted. He said he was a total prick to him. He said he totally, he said everybody thinks that, yes, it was terrible, he got beat up, but he was all, you don't understand what an asshole I was to them.
Well,
okay, if you're an asshole to cops, you're going to get your ass beat.
He didn't deserve what he got.
He didn't.
He deserved to be restrained.
Yeah, but...
We saw Rodney drunk. He's a scary dude when he drinks. He's the nicest guy on earth.
Big scary dude.
He is the nicest guy on the planet when he's sober.
Yes.
I asked him what was the most important thing about him getting this book written, and he said... not that I live on, but that my words do. That I'm long after I'm dust and in the ground, people are going to remember. Can't we all get along?
Yeah. Well, Bob and I were heartbroken when we lost Rodney. He's the
isn't that from
the
Wizard of Oz? Can't we all just get along?
Sounds like it should have been.
There's no place like home.
Okay, that's it.
So no place like in addition to Deanna bearing witness to your illness, Jamie had to live through a bit, too.
Well, right? He went through a little
Jamie and I
play
used to
experience
have,
himself.
Well, I understand, but Jamie and I used to have many conversations about you.
Before you guys ever met.
Yeah, well, was it before even?
Before you guys met.
Is that right?
Course.
Is that
we were talking? Because we used to get on the phone and we'd be, Doc, he wants to come in. And you're like, are you sure? And then the first time you came and met us, I think it was in Canoga Park. We had that house in Woodland Hills or something.
Yeah. I just remember I shared with you your fear.
Definitely.
That's what I remember.
But tell him why you got sober.
I don't know.
Okay.
That's a good question. To have a better life.
You told me that how can I have your brother put in there and say my brother's this, my brother's that, and try and get him help when I'm doing drugs too?
Yeah.
I remember actually when I called Dr. Drew, we were going to meet up maybe 2 weeks later. And at that time, I was using. Mm. And the first time I talked to Dr. Drew, I didn't pick up after that. And I even told Dr. Drew when he came up to the house, he says, are you sober? I said, well, I've been sober for the last 2 weeks because I didn't want to be a
hypocrite. I've forgotten that for this moment. I remember you telling me that. I just want to know what I was walking into. Were you using too or not? We need to get you out.
I wasn't using
not
at that time.
No, but I just couldn't tell what was going on. It was a pretty chaotic scene.
It was chaotic.
I was kidnapped.
We kidnapped the guy.
My mom and dad had these gang members.
The Crips kidnap him.
And they took all my money.
Well, that worked.
They were giving me dope. They were giving me better crack than I was smoking. They were giving me better pills than I was getting. More of everything. It was like this one kid would pull fucking painkillers out of his ass. Literally. I go, dude, you got any painkillers? Yeah, here you go. And the hand was like always. It was like it was nonstop. They had me. The longer that they kept me, the longer they were going to get paid.
Wow.
And my mom was paying them thousands of dollars a week. So the longer they had me. And all they did was get me high. And then when I tried to get my own drugs, they handcuffed me and leg cuffed me to the staircase, you know, the railing on the staircase. And I pooped my pants. They left me there for 2 hours.
I didn't know anything about
that. Oh,
my God. Is this in the book, Larry? Because that sounds like a movie right there.
Yeah.
I think we need to come out the movies.
Seven separate parts in the book where Steven hits such rock bottom that you have to just say he's going to die or he's got to get into rehab.
But no, rehab, for one, doesn't do anything unless you want it to.
Right.
Two, nobody can make you change unless you want to or you're in jail.
What?
You're in jail. They can make you change.
I got a good one, Drew. I'm going to tell you. So I don't know what year it was. 90s or whatever.
93, 94, New York.
Yeah. So I, I drove him to the airport. I booked him to go to Hazelden. Uh-huh. I had the guy. He knows what he looks like. Sitting at the airport. Somehow, Stephen doesn't get off the plane. Stays on the plane. And somehow, New how York did you City. Get out? And he ended up in New York.
Going for 2 weeks. 2-3 weeks.
Wow. One-way airplane to Minneapolis. He stayed on the plane until he knew that the Hazelden people would go away. And then got off
and went to New York. I went to some club. People recognized me. Did drugs for like 3 weeks. Came home.
But this is the this. Your poor mom's getting anxious hearing these stories, right?
Oh, she knows everything.
Give her the headset. Hold on. We're having to pass the mic around here because there's so many of us in the room right now. We have four mics. And
one time I took Steven to the airport. And I says, you know what? I'm going to stay here till the plane takes off. And everybody gets on the plane, and lo and behold, Steven jumps off the plane just before they're going to
take off.
And so I'm there. So he's surprised that I'm there. He thinks I'm dropping him off, and then I'm going to go in the car and go home. I says, Steven, what are you doing? And he was so mad at me because he saw me, and I just took him right back home.
Well, the addict was mad.
Yeah. I feel like
because I've wasted so much money going to treatment centers when I knew I was only going to stay 2 or 3 days. I was doing it to
make everybody else happy.
Exactly, appease you.
Yeah, that's what
everybody.
He used to tell me.
And I'm sure you heard many times, Stephen, what are you doing? Yeah, Stephen, what are you talking about? Stephen, what are you doing? Those words I've heard out of her mouth many times.
And the reason he said he was doing these things was to appease
me. Well, he was right. He was being honest. Yeah. He was being honest. That's what he was doing.
Being an addict and getting any help whatsoever is all about being honest. Well, I didn't have to tell you that I had those two drinks and, thousand days.
It's honesty.
Years.
Yeah.
Rigorous honesty. If I didn't, I'm going to hold that in.
Every time you tell a lie, you're leading towards your next use.
Yeah.
You're on your way. You're on your way.
It's just and then you lie again and then again.
Whatever it is, you're on your way. But you're telling the truth for yourself as much as your spiritual life. But a patient of mine paraphrased what you're saying in a wonderful way. I wrote about it in a book. She said, how do you give somebody get it? Which I thought was a way of saying, how do you make somebody willing?
Yeah.
And neither Bob nor I have an answer to that.
There is none.
Yeah. And
if I went to jail, if I'd go to jail for 20 years, the day I got out, I would go use.
Well, and so the reason I was sort of, Bob was giving me just shit about this a few minutes ago, but I was I was drilling into what happened to your moment of change, that day you woke Carolina up and said, I'm going to stop. Sometimes you will find there's things happening leading up to that.
But I always say, because it happened to me too. I don't know why.
Well, you were in prison.
I got out of prison.
Prison doesn't stop. It got his attention.
It got his attention.
What motivated me day after day was I wanted a better life. Yeah. And prison was chasing me.
But why didn't you want a better life?
But the day that you stop, the day that you have that thing he's describing, I think it's a disservice to try to analyze it. It's a gift. That's why AA
says it's
a gift that comes out of nowhere or from God. I don't know, but it made no sense. I heard this great AA guy say, it was not a particularly different day than any other day.
Yeah.
And all this, that was the day he decided to stop.
But Stephen, the one thing I've noticed, and you tell me if this is true or not, it's your experience. If not, fine. But that one of the features is you sort of see yourself for real. Like you see yourself as you are more clearly.
Things definitely slow down.
Or you see your life as it really is and you go, whoa, I got to change
when
this.
When you're drinking and using, you're not in reality. Yeah. And the last thing you're going to do is look at yourself.
Right.
Because you're already doing these drugs and drinking because you're miserable.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is you're miserable because you're drinking.
Yeah.
And you're drinking because you're miserable. Alcohol is one of the strongest depressants. So I would go, I'm depressed, and I would go drink, and I'm getting more depressed. I need another drink, and then the next time I'm getting thrown out. That's why I have my sponsor, which is very important, have somebody you could talk to.
Yeah.
And my sponsor, is like Jamie says, he's a paraplegic. He's in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
I can't call him up and go, this is happening, that is happening. It takes him, he needs people to help him, and just to take a shower. He needs somebody to shave him.
Yeah.
Okay. Dude, I don't want to go to the bathroom. I don't want to go outside. I don't want to practice. I can't do that.
Yeah.
I can't do that. It's like,
There's an old Buddhist saying, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Yeah.
And I just believe that. You have this moment of clarity, and then everything starts to unfold. I will say that that day that Stephen described happened to him, things were much clearer.
Because, well,
like
with
they
me,
hadn't been for years.
Because I had that 1 month of being in the mental hospital in Kentucky that cleared me up. You start feeling again.
Okay, so treatment had some purpose for you, which is you were held to the point where you could clear at least.
Well, I could get clear enough to where when I left, I did go and drink immediately. But then I kept doing it like 2-3 more days, and then I go, something like Bob said, I can't do this anymore.
Okay, so maybe you had some clarity in that facility where you saw things
because
more clearly.
You can't make rational decisions like I did to go, wake my wife up and say, I'm going to go. If you're under the influence.
No, no way.
So that time being away from the drugs did help. Even though I drank for 3 days I wasn't as fucked up mentally and spiritually as I was. So I had a little bit more.
Did you have any experiences in treatment that month that got through to you? Anything?
Well, I went there first to detox.
Yeah.
And then they were going to take me to this. They took me to this place where there's a bunch of young people, like 100 of them, and they all had their heads not shaved, but like a millimeter long, and they would have them write on paper thousands of times these words.
What?
And there was this. It was a cult, crazy thing, and I kept telling him.
Stephen has been to every
crazy
place.
Was that Narcan or something?
Someplace in Kentucky.
What do they call it? Is that Narcan? Is that?
No, it just sounds like behavior mod. Yeah,
exactly, behavioral play for younger people. I was the oldest person there. Okay, I was
usually,
all young people.
Drew, in behavior mod, the first assignment you get is to write the entire rules of the facility, and usually it's 8 or 10
pages
long.
That's fine. Yeah. That's not writing, I won't use, I won't use.
They weren't writing, I won't use, I won't use.
No,
they were writing.
Something like what he's
saying. Copying the rules, most likely.
But just over and over. I mean, these people have stacks of pages.
You know what I used to do when I was in that program? So I don't mind just writing. So I would just write, and then I wrote them within a day of getting there, and usually it takes people 3 or 4 days. And I just kept writing them and selling them to new
clients. That's an addict for you. That's a brilliant addict.
And now Jamie has
anything
also
to make
a part. Jamie's had experience also of transforming physically, which has been a part of your recovery.
Yeah, I mean, it's, better life, better health,
You start wanting to take care of yourself,
right? I'm 41 years old now. I got married recently.
Congratulations.
I'm having a baby on the way,
15 weeks pregnant.
We work out.
And Dr. Drew, thank you so much for Celebrity Rehab. Because, there's a lot of critics that have said, tried to shame that show or whatever. But I believe that show saved my brother's life. Wow. And I remember in Las Vegas sitting with him, and he's hitting the crack pipe. And we're watching Celebrity Rehab. And he's like, I wonder if I saw myself on TV, if this would change me. And I said, should I call Dr. Drew and get you on the show? He says, yeah, let's call Dr. Drew.
Wow.
And then, that was a year before.
That was about a year before. And it took about a year from that point on to about a year to get you.
The kidnapping. Wow.
We had to go through, all the stuff that he says is all true. And some of it's really messed up. And I'm sorry about all that.
I know.
But you know what? It got him to the point where he's at today. He's alive. So it doesn't matter what happened yesterday.
Yeah.
Where are you at today?
Yeah.
Okay, and I thought my brother, because that was always my hero, the guy I looked up to, he's 10 years older than me. And, I always thought I was going to lose my big brother.
You were scared shitless.
Ever since I was a little kid, I was scared shitless.
But listen, I know, and I could tell the depths of it. And at first, I'm laughing because I was like, oh, come on, another codependent. Then I came and witnessed, and I was like, oh, geez, Jamie, you got a point there. You should be scared. This is really serious. And because codependents, their disease will always play on you and amplify your fears and stuff.
But you don't understand. When you saw me, I was with those gang members. They came, remember we were at the Rainbow interviews? They were giving me so much drugs.
Well, but no, I wasn't there, but I was at your house.
People,
but there was a bunch of people at the house that day.
No, there were people who were holding me hostage.
Wow.
I had people, because we, it was real.
Say, don't say yeah like you did a good thing because no, you didn't.
Okay. All right, does he have a resentment? You think he still has a resentment?
I don't have it. I don't want him thinking that it was a good thing.
Impeccable words. Impeccable words.
I don't want him thinking what he did was a good thing or the right thing.
Well, to be fair, it's the lengths to which codependency drives us. Right?
But he's not a codependent. He's an addict himself.
And a codependent.
My mom is a codependent.
Your mom is strictly codependent.
He is an addict. He was doing drugs himself. So who is he to tell me?
Well, here's like, can I defend the situation? I was there too. Nothing could contain you. Nothing could stop you.
No. Not just me.
Even all our friends, and when we'd go to rehab, we would just get in line. We weren't going to fucking stay sober, but we wouldn't cause all the trouble you would cause.
I was resentful, dude.
And I appreciate that because, you know, he points a finger at me and all this, but you know what? I feel like I really helped save my brother's life. Yeah. He won't ever look like that.
They kidnapped me. And like I said, they handcuffed me to the fucking pole.
Let me say.
I took a razor blade and cut my neck cut the thing so I can get out of there.
I get it.
Okay? These people were holding me out.
Well, they were taking all my money. In his defense, Jamie couldn't have known it was going to go that bad.
Well, no, hold on.
Yeah, we don't know. Right?
Really? He didn't know it was going to be. He had the Crips and the Bloods.
It is the
These are gang members that kill people.
They don't really usually work together. It's one or the other.
It's the links.
No, they work together.
I got them both.
He got them both together.
For Steven.
For me.
That's how bad he was. He was so bad off, we had to bring both of them together.
And the Crips helped me.
But here's the deal. To me, that's a sign of the lengths to which codependency drive us.
Yes.
And there's a bottom to codependency just the way there's a bottom to addiction.
Yeah, I don't want to do that, Doc. Trust me.
You didn't want to do that. Yeah, and that was your codependency bottom.
I didn't know any better. I didn't know anything else.
You want to get even more into it? There was a lot of people pushing Jamie to do shit like that. Like Eric, like friends of ours, were pushing you. Like, are you going to do something? Are you going to do something?
Right, but
you
got
to understand the context, Stephen.
Oh, no,
a lot of people weren't
now.
Talking to you. Yeah. They were talking to him.
Okay. And he wasn't the guy that he's today.
I know.
You know? I know.
He doesn't remember that.
He knows the spin about this. But his point is right. It was not okay that you did that, even though it did end up saving his life, and he is okay. It was a codependency bottom for you.
What I was doing is I was playing God, okay? And I cannot control.
I learned all that.
Yeah.
Because I can't control people, places, and things. And that's what I learned in my recovery.
You didn't know that.
There you go.
Yep. But I didn't know that. But you know what?
So now we do. So by the way, your shit got him sober too.
Yeah.
Right?
No, it all worked out.
In a way, you saved his life.
He did, Doc.
Yeah.
So many things.
I see you did, like so many. Yeah.
So many things. Like,
how many
him,
people are going to take claim for saving Stephen Adler's life?
Hey, all
I thought
you.
I did.
Everyone in this room, you're number one. You were definitely the first person to try.
Well, also.
And stuck with me.
Mr. Garcia.
Look, 25 years
25
later.
Years
Don
later.
Miguel Ruiz also was instrumental in saving your life, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Big time.
We got to try to get that guy before this Tom Brady, Stephen Adler stuff gets
out.
I know.
That's so funny. Even he did that. And Ethan go, I'm going to Disney. He said, I'm going to go home and read the four agreements.
Yeah. But listen, how are we doing on time, Ms. Producer?
We're done.
Okay, we got to wrap this thing up.
This is a day in the life.
No, but I just want to make it clear that last little thing we went through, I don't have resentment anymore. I'm just talking about the past and how it didn't help me because
I get it.
It was me when I got it.
You guys are brothers.
And I love them. And I love him. And I don't want to put it at the end. Actually, real brother.
It's easy for me to say, however you got here, we're all grateful.
I'm just grateful.
I know, but I am here. And I know the road here was not easy. And I know everyone had bottoms for various stuff along the course. That's a miracle. I'm pointing at Deanna over there.
You, my queen.
Carolina's a miracle.
Yes.
She's
a mama.
They've all traveled a road less traveled. Everybody here has.
It was a broken down road too.
You give her the headphones. One more Deanna story before we wrap it up. Go ahead. But you may want to flip the.
Okay. The time that Stephen was kidnapped. Wait a minute. By the way, before I say anything else, you see these two handsome guys on the sofa?
Yes.
I hatched both of them.
Well done.
Thank you. So anyway, Jamie calls me up. He says, Ma, you got to drive Stephen to Los Angeles. I said, all right, because I want to help.
Okay? I didn't know what was going to happen over there. They didn't tell me anything.
You didn't take me to Los Angeles.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't. They drugged me at this guy's
house. No, I'm not talking about that. This is nothing. This is something
else. This
is
the time when you were smoking crack in the car with Mom.
Wait a minute.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wait a minute. That one.
So anyways, so I go to Stephen's house to pick him up, and he's angry because he's high already. He's angry.
Yeah.
And I said, Stephen, we got to leave by 2 o'clock because I can't see at night driving. You know, and it's going to get dark. So finally, about 5 o'clock, he's ready to go. He throws his suitcase. He throws your suitcase down the stairs. All right, let's go. So we get in the car. We get in the car, and I'm driving. And I've taken this trip numerous times. I know where I'm going. I know how to get from Las Vegas to L.A.
He needs a little detour?
No detour, nothing like that. So I'm driving, and I'm driving, and we're about an hour away from Los Angeles. And all of a sudden, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know where I was.
Oh, did you get high in the crack too?
That's exact. And I didn't know that at the time. Oh. So I stopped the car and I said, Stephen, I says, I don't understand. Why are we here? Where are we going? Oh, what are we doing?
Look what I did. Look what I did.
And because he's smoking crack in the car. He's smoking crack. And I keep telling him, I said, stop smoking. I don't want you smoking in the car. Stop smoking.
So basically what you're saying is my mom smoked crack.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Crack is whack, Mom. Crack is whack.
So wait.
Yeah, there's that smoke crack.
Wait a minute. So anyway, so.
I thought you did do drugs, Dan.
I will not talk about
unintentionally,
that.
Unintentionally.
And so. I stopped the car, and I said, Stephen, I says, I don't understand. I says, I don't know how to get to Los Angeles. And you know what he says to me? He says, Ma, don't worry. I'll guide you.
He's
so high on crack, and he's going to guide me. So like a dummy, I says, okay. I says, okay. So he's telling me how to get to Ventura Boulevard.
Oh, my God.
And an hour later, we were in L.A. right where we had to be, and I didn't know what I was doing. I was so happy that the police didn't stop us. Nobody looked at us, you know. Wow. It was crazy. But I drove all the way there, and I'm secondhand smoke. And I kept telling him, don't smoke in the car. Don't smoke. Yeah, but he doesn't listen to me.
Don't. You know? So, I didn't listen to you when I was 11. I'm not listening
to you now.
Why
are you going
to
listen now?
We're going to start
you
with
still
new,
don't listen.
New campaigns about secondhand crack. Forget secondhand tobacco.
Secondhand crack.
All right, Stephen. Pleasure, man.
Thank you
for coming. Good to see you, buddies. Thank you, Larry.
Love you, Bob.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Jamie, we're going to get a picture of two of us. Here we go. Ready, photo. All right, we're going to wrap this thing up and take pictures. See you on the website, GoDoctor.com. We'll see you next time.
Thanks. So down, oh, cool down.
jungle gets worse here every day. You learn to live like an animal in the jungle where you play. Got a hunger for what you see, you'll take it eventually. You can have anything you want, but you better not take it from me. In the jungle, welcome to the jungle. Gonna bring you to your knees, to your knees, yeah. In the jungle, welcome to the jungle. Gonna be a serpentine, your serpentine, yeah. In the jungle, welcome to the jungle. Gonna bring you to your knees, up to your knees, yeah. Be a serpentine, a serpentine. Thank you.